5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The owners of those migratory workers who comprise the Pacific Coast baseball teams meet tomorrow in Phoenix, Arizona, to discuss crop rotation and rates of yield. Tacoma and Pierce County officials, who pungled up close to $1 million of taxpayers' money to fertilize the local field that the Coast League has been farming in the past 6 years, have not been invited to attend the session. But the locals have had their heads patted by the likes of Massa Dewey Soriano, the president of the Coast League, and Massa Rosie Ryan, the straw boss of the diaphanous Little Giants. Now you see them, now you don't. And they've all been told that everything will probably come out all right, that some other big city enterprise will probably condescend to crop the local pasture, if the rent should be right, though not necessarily for long enough to pay off the mortgage. We should all live so long. Anyway, everybody in charge, or everybody with responsibility, is optimistic. And some of those on the sidelines are amused. I don't know if former Councilwoman Clara Gehring is amused, but she has a right to be. It was Mrs. Gehring, I find from my notes, who cast the only vote against the use of the inside levy funds for the ballpark. Back in 1959, she observed at the time of her vote that while she was a baseball fan of long standing, and she still had grievous doubts about the permanence of any minor league franchise that might come here. From what she read in Sports Illustrated, the lady said, she was under the impression that Tacoma would be lucky if the small Giants should stay in town for 5 to 8 years. They stayed 6. Clara, Cassandra, we all salute you. Incidentally, there's a fine spoof in the current issue of the New Yorker magazine called The Making of a Pastime, 1971. A writer I never heard of, F.P. Tullius, looks back on the 1971 season and discusses the proposed move of the Yankees. The Yankees, it seems, are going to move to Tuscaloosa from Phoenix. The writer quotes a mythical representative of CBS as saying, quote, "For the past 2 or 3 years, the people of the big town, Phoenix, have simply not got behind our team. Now the city fathers have flatly turned down our generous offer that would have allowed them to build us a new $70 million domed stadium with soundproof dugouts, bullpen movie theaters, and an exciting artificial thunderstorm facility. Phoenix has said no, and as a result, we plan to move to Tuscaloosa, subject to league approval." Elsewhere in the satire, there's a reference to a game between the Reno Giants and the Las Vegas Astros, a renewal of baseball's oldest new rivalry. That scores an inadvertent hit on the hopes of local officials that if we do get a franchise, Tacomans will turn out in such huge numbers to watch the Tacoma Cincinnatians or the Tacoma Philadelphians or some such humble Phoenix San Franciscans for their desertion, and that in doing so they will painlessly pay off the debt that the officials imposed on the electorate for a playfield they chose to name for a stockholder in the enterprise that has now deserted us. Elsewhere in sports, Mike Garrett, the most elusive sociology major in the history of the University of Southern California, and a candidate for the Heisman Trophy, football's highest honor for an amateur, has confided to a columnist for the Los Angeles Times that a Negro, even if he's the greatest running back in his school's history, never really feels like more than half a student because of segregation and forms of prejudice practiced by campus fraternities. Garrett's comment adds perspective to an issue involved in a meeting scheduled for this afternoon between local NAACP chapter leaders and officials of the University of Puget Sound. The NAACP people are disturbed about the fact that the university solicited and received federal funds for construction of men's dormitory space, and then in effect delegated the operation of the space to local chapters of national fraternities, most of which are hardly bellwethers of equality. The fraternities on the UPS campus are said to have dropped their former white-only clauses in their national requirements, but the NAACP people feel that there are indications of discrimination in the fact that three of the fraternities have, as far as is known, never admitted a Negro member to any of their chapters nationally, and that no chapter on the UPS campus has ever admitted a Negro. The NAACP contends that in a student body as diverse as that of UPS, some fraternities would have admitted Negroes, and more would have admitted Jews and Orientals if a quiet gentleman's agreement were not in operation. The NAACP board has dismissed as wholly inadequate a vague letter written by President R. Franklin Thompson, advising the chapters that the school would, in line with the Judeo-Christian ethic, support any local chapter that should get in trouble with its national if it were to accept racially or religiously unorthodox pledges. The NAACP feels that UPS should state in its catalogs and in other promotional literature that the university insists and demands that all students who qualify for entrance may sign up for rushing by fraternities and sororities, especially if rushing is a prerequisite for acceptance into school-sponsored, federally financed facilities. The chapter asks that UPS tell the fraternities flatly that it will not tolerate discrimination, not just that it will support them if they fail to discriminate and get in trouble for it. And the chapter asks that the three chapters of the so-called Miami Triad, the houses which have nationally never admitted a Negro, be required to say that they do not practice discrimination as a policy. They feel that such lip service to equality, even if it didn't result in pledges, is the least that should be expected of a school committed to the Judeo-Christian ethic and recipient of federal funds. The university, for its part, feels, and most would agree, that it would be beyond its prerogative for the school to set a racial quota system for the houses. The school points out that it has actively recruited Negro students and is subsidizing the attendance of several Negro students, not all of them athletes. The school points out that only one Negro has ever applied for rushing to the fraternities, and the officials sincerely believe that it was not pigment but personality that prevented his acceptance. The university is aware that its position is awkward and that it cannot possibly satisfy all of the demands that are going to be made on it by the Negro community, or for that matter by the segregationists. The administrators feel that they are meeting their commitments to conscience and to the community in trying to recruit and to subsidize able Negro scholars and to see that they have adequate housing on the campus. And they fear that the pressures which are being brought upon them by the NAACP and other civil rights groups and individuals are more likely to hamper than to help their ultimate aims. And there are, of course, more important problems facing the University of Puget Sound and Tacoma in general, and the Negro community in particular, than the fact that national fraternities on the UPS campus have, either by design or inadvertence, kept their doors closed to members of minority groups. Employment is far more important to the Negro community as a whole. So is residential housing. But this dispute does focus attention on the fact that, good or bad, depending on the point of view, UPS has in recent years managed to stand pretty much aloof from a problem that has commanded the attention of a majority of the nation's colleges and religious institutions. And there's the companion fact that if the NAACP should follow up its plan to protest the fraternity housing situation to the federal agencies, UPS may well face a choice between continued aloofness and continued federal funds for its building programs. Time and circumstance catches up with all of us. To paraphrase the religious poet, no school is an island entire of itself. Every school is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. Or to quote from a Methodist bishop, none of us can escape commitment in the struggle for equality of man, and this includes the equality of all Americans.